Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Pisgah Podcast.
We are your hosts. I'm Mangler, and that is Drew, and you are listening to Pisgah. We're coming to you live from the closed gate at the bottom of Forest Road 74 in Big Ivy.
Hey, we can still use the trails. You just can't use the forest road, though.
Exactly.
So, past week's news and updates. Welcome back. We've had a bit of a break. I've been traveling.
Well, actually, we've both been kind of on the road in one way or the other. Mine has mostly been work-related, but with some creative ways to include bike riding. You know, a few months ago, Drew, you led the way on a snowshoe trip, which I later repeated, and then I opened up the Whistler gate, so to speak. So talk us about your promised land trip that you just wrapped up.
Yeah, I just had an excellent vacation to the Pacific Northwest with two good friends of mine. We spent half the time in Bellingham, Washington, and half the time in Whistler / Squamish, places that I haven't actually been to before. So, you know, I've checked out Northeast, Southwest, our area, pretty much everywhere else in the U.S. except for the upper Northwest. So it was good to check it out. I really needed it, and it was very humbling.
Yeah, humbling is a good way to describe your first trip to the Pacific Northwest.
Right, yeah. In Bellingham, my biggest takeaway is that we don't have steep trails here. Doesn't matter who tells you what or anything about what's steep. We don't have steep trails here in comparison. We have ridges, which are cool, but everything out there is just fall lines and loam, and there's no character of a trail here that reflects what they have out there.
Definitely not.
And there's a lot of hike biking, too.
Steep up and down.
Yeah. And then crossing the border into Canada, of course, it's, you know, Whistler is the promised land. Whistler is probably the North American Mecca for mountain biking, for all intents and purposes. And I get it. I mean, we have bike parks all over the place around here, but the amount of land and provincial land and Queensland that they have leases on to extend trails onto, it's mind-boggling. It's a huge, huge, huge place. And once again, just being humbled there, it's a place where I was completely on guard and in my head the whole time and just was intimidated, even for things that I would normally ride.
Yeah, it's different out there. And, you know, your first run down a trail, it's like, oh, okay, this is how this goes. Okay, I need to sharpen up real quick.
Right. Yeah, you got to be on point. You got to mind your P's and Q's, because there's a lot of stuff that so let's talk about, you know, classics. Top of the World, Khyber Pass. It's just one of those things that you have to do at some point. And I won't say it's incredibly overly technical to ride any of that, but it's exposed. But on the other end of that, it's also got some of the most beautiful long-range views that you're ever going to see. And so you got to split the difference between watching what the heck you're doing and also not missing the scenery.
That epic view.
Yeah.
And also of note, the one cool thing about British Columbia is, you know, it is a coastal mountain range. So you pretty much have alpine starting at like 6,000 feet.
Right.
So you're not out of breath up in the alpine. You can pretty much ride normally like you would here.
Yeah, it's incredible, because I was noticing that from where we start to where, you know, as high up as you go, it's roughly, it's not that much different than the amount of elevation gain and loss that we have here, but you start at a much lower place.
Well, I mean, Whistler base is like 2,200 feet. And then I think Top of the World's like 7,600 or something like that. You know, so
that's correct.
You're looking at like a good 5,000, 5,500 foot descent. It's just a lot steeper.
Yeah, for sure. But I guess I meant more or less like in Washington and Bellingham.
Well, yeah.
Where you start around 400-600 feet.
And yeah, you go literally sea level.
Yeah, literally sea level, and you go up to around 3,000. Yeah, it was amazing. I've got a lot of stuff that I have to check off my list, so I'm gonna go back sometime.
Yeah, you know what, and you and I need to make it a point to do that trip together. We need to do a Pisgah Podcast team excursion to the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I would love that. We should definitely do that in the coming year. But otherwise, we had excellent weather. We didn't have any of the smoke from the fires in the area. We had highs in the mid-70s at the most every day. And, you know, it was just great weather all the way around. And we got rain right before we got to Whistler. And we had one rain day while we were there, so the dirt stayed perfect the entire time. A lot of things were running really good because of that.
Awesome. That's pretty primo when you get, like, a good rain before you get there.
Yeah, primed it up for us. So, yeah, I'll end it with that. But, yeah, my trip shout-outs, I got to say props to Matt Carswell for the endless amount of stoke, the encouragement, and the trail knowledge. Jake Smith for the logistics and the kitchen crafts. And super stoked to ride with some former Pisgah locals, Elliot and Heather Carter, as well as their friends Brad and Alex for showing us the Bellingham goods. And then our new friends Paul and Lynette for the premium accommodations and hospitality in Whistler.
Wow, sounds like you had a pretty bang-up trip. And, you know, while you wrapped up your trip to what I would call the mountain bike capital of the world, I just got back from the self-proclaimed mountain bike capital of the world, you know, Northwest Arkansas. It's kind of a joke that they use that term, but it's whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, for the show that I'm working on, Fox's Big Noon Kickoff, if you like college football, we made a visit this past weekend to Arkansas for the Texas at Arkansas game. So, of course, I had my bike with me. And, you know, I clocked in a few new zones in the Bentonville area. Most notable was an after-work rip with the BMX underhanded legend, Chris Markham himself. It's always a good time riding big bikes with the BMX homies.
Amen. Were there any particular standout zones from riding on that trip?
Dude, the World Cup cross-country course was surprisingly, it was eye-opening for me. You know, that area was closest to our filming location, so I hit it up solo after we wrapped on Friday to get a ride in before dark, because it's getting dark sooner now. I was not expecting some of the gnarly setups on that course. You know, unfortunately, some of it was kind of, you know, taped off and closed or had like fresh grass seeded on it. But the segments that I did ride, I mean, just wow. You know, some legit big drops, like a gap jump rhythm section, and a very rowdy rock garden. Actually, probably like three really rowdy rock gardens.
Right on. What bike were you on?
I went out there on my Izzo. And, you know, honestly, I kind of wish I had my Enduro for that ride.
Yeah, and I was just thinking a lot about these World Cup cross-country bikes. 100, maybe 120 millimeter travel bikes, possibly not even dropper posts, running at race pace.
Dude, you know, so after I hit this one drop, easily a 6-foot drop, and I'm not exaggerating at all, I thought about that. You know, we discussed a few episodes ago how the XC Olympic course looked really fun to ride. I still agree with that. And, you know, you and I did note that it was probably gnarlier in person, but I think that I'm a bit more mentally ready and prepared for what like a World Cup level cross-country course would be like.
Yeah, they're no joke. Speaking of XC, the GNCC e-mountain bike race series just wrapped up, and Pisgah podcast guest numero uno, Callie Horwath, has completed a perfect season.
Yes, that is so awesome. Callie went in hard and won 8 out of 8 races in the GNCC series. Not to mention, she was chosen to represent the USA at the World Championships a few weeks ago.
That's amazing. Well, yeah, I guess she did mention in her interview that she wanted to see more XC racing, so she went and found it.
Yeah, pretty much. And onto some non-bike race-related news. The Cradle to Grave 10K and 30K trail races have decided to cancel their events and focus those funds to the repair and improvement of the damaged trails from Tropical Storm Fred. The Transylvania Times has a much nicer article with way better reporting than we do, of course. But I felt it was important to bring up, you know, to give some awareness that some non-bike groups are also doing their part to help out the trails.
That's what I love about our local community. Both promoters and sponsors all realize that this land can both giveth and taketh away. So no one's really going to ignore the damage left by these kinds of storms.
Also, as much as I'm sure it bummed out some participants, Pisgah Monster Cross canceled its race this last weekend. A tropical storm Fred wreaked havoc on the side of the forest that the race course ran on. So I'm sure it was a tough decision to not try and reroute it, but honestly, with a lot of the closures of the forest roads, it kind of didn't have a lot of exciting route options, but hopefully those riders went and rode for fun instead and had a good time because the weather was amazing.
Yeah, for sure. And on the canceled race tip, the Fort William World Cup downhill was canceled, opening the door for Snowshoe West Virginia World Cup to become a doubleheader. These races happened this week in West Virginia, and I have prepared a race precap for you all.
Ooh, awesome. Let's hear it.
I'm going to try to move through this as smoothly as possible. But for the Snowshoe World Cup 2021, the last two rounds of World Cup downhill and the last XCO of the World Cup calendar are happening this week in Snowshoe West, by God, Virginia.
By God.
Here's the Pisgah podcast overview of these races and our mouthy host's take on what to watch for during these races. First off becomes a downhill doubleheader after an event shuffle due to COVID travel restrictions. This is where it is all going to come down to a World Cup overall title. So, for the women's downhill overall, here's the top five. We have Miriam Nicole with 810 points. Camille Blanche with 695 points. Connie Seagrave in third at 662 points. Valentina Hull at 645 points. And coming in fifth is Monica Rasnick at 517 points. So there's 200 points up for grabs for first place finish. And there's two races left. So truly, any of these five could be within striking distance. Miriam Nicole has been on an upswing. Not only has she got the best placement to build upon, but she's been racing the most aggressive in the past few races with wins in Morbihan and Lenzerheide. Camille Blanche has been probably the most consistent overall, having been on every podium in every round. But I believe the real race here is going to be for third place, as any of the top five could feasibly wind up in that position, either falling back or moving up. So my picks for the top three overall women are going to have to be first place Miriam Nicole, second place Camille Blanche, and third place Monica Rasnick. I'm a big fan of both Miriam and Tani Seagrave because these are the two who finally gave Rachel Atherton some consistent and multi-season competition in the world's downhill open, which was really needed. On to the men's downhill. So, we have an interesting spread here as well. First place is Thibaut Daprela with 752 points. Loris Vergier with 566 points. Third goes to Super Bruni, Loic Bruni, with 454 points. Fourth place is Lloyd Greenland with 422 points. And then Britain's own Danny Hart in fifth at 391 points. So, I think the overall winner is going to be French. It's always a safe bet.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
But let's talk about he who has the most points here, Thibaut Daprela. Mm-hmm. He's often backseated as just being Amaury Pierion's teammate, but this kid was junior world champion in 18 and 19. And he has been super consistent, even though he broke his nose and lacerated his tongue in his country's series this year. Back in July, I think it was. So his consistency has had him on the podium at every World Cup downhill this year, including a win in his home country at Leger. Loris Vergier has been on a tear the past two races, finally getting some World Cup wins late in the season, opposite of last season, where he got started with a bang but then fell back. And you can obviously never count out Loic Bruni. His finish in Leogang and Leger is the main reason why his points tally isn't higher. His last few finishes, though, certainly make him a contender, if he can nail two solid finishes. Lloyd Greenland and Danny Hart are two of my favorite dark horse contenders year after year. I'd rank Danny as slightly more consistent, but the points don't really tell that story currently. Mm-hmm. Danny has, however, won here at Snowshoe in 2019.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Where Bruni got fourth. Other worthwhile dark horses are Troy Brosnan, who finished just off the podium in sixth in the 2019 Snowshoe World Cup, but he started his 2021 season with a win in Leogang and a third-place medal at Worlds. As for our regional homies, well, Dak Norton, who is our current national champ, is a consistent top 10 World Cup finisher with a recent 7th in Lenzerheide and placed 9th last time there was a World Cup at Snowshoe in 2019. Lucas Shaw, he has a few good results under him this year, but not the most consistent. Second at U.S. Nationals and 6th at the Marlboro World Cup are nothing to scoff at, though. But he had an impressive crash last week at Lenzerheide, and I'm super glad he didn't get a bad injury from that.
Yeah, that was pretty gnarly.
Yeah, it was pretty gross. But my off-the-cuff call for the overall, I think it's going to be tight between Lloris and Thibaut. But I feel like Thibaut's consistency will keep him in the overall, with Lloris in second, Bruni in third, just as it currently stands. Mm. Full French podium.
I don't disagree with that, but I really think that we're going to have some local boys do a shakeup.
I agree with that. I think that the results I speak of are going to be for the World Cup overall, but I think we're going to see some good racing from our local dudes and our standard bearers from the Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And so the second race, we're going to have XCO in this coming weekend, which will be the finals also. And the women's XCO standings, we've got Loana Lecompte, sorry if I said that name incorrect, with 1,550 points. Jenny Resvids with 1,065 points. Third place is Pauline Ferrand-Prevot with 990 points. Fourth place is Rebecca McConnell with 955 points. And fifth place is Evie Richards coming in with 935 points. Super tight field. And I think Loana is the obvious front runner for the odds, but she has slightly slipped her spot on the podium in recent races. She has, however, finished 7th at Snowshoe in 2019, with Pauline Ferrand-Prevot out for the remainder of the season. Jenny Resvids, Rebecca McConnell, and Evie Richards have their work cut out for them. Jenny laid down a good foundation for points all season. Rebecca and Evie have both been consistent, but I have to think that Evie's win in Linzerheide is going to generate some momentum for her. So my call for the overall is going to be first, Loana, second, Evie, and third, Jenny. A dark horse winner might stir the pot, but I think this is how the overall goes down.
Right on.
And we'll wrap it up with the men's XCO. The men's standings are currently Matthias Flückiger with 1,429 points, Andrzej Cink with 1,089 points, Viktor Koretsky with 1,075 points, fourth place is Nino Schurter with 1,004 points, and fifth, Jordan Sarov with 935 points. Now, Matthias has been consistent here, and to a lesser degree, so has Andrzej, and Nino has as well, but without a podium finish in Linzerheide, Andrzej, second place overall, is probably the most danger. I imagine Matthias keeping his first overall, as it is impossible to lose 200 points, but the second to fifth place all have a very tight span.
And what does a win give you in XCO? Is that also 200 points?
Yeah, you get 200 points for first place, and then I think it's 160, 120, and incrementally on down.
Alrighty. So yeah, that'll be good to watch. Looking at what races are ahead of us in their schedules, and then also looking at the Snowshoe West Virginia weather forecast, it's like it could be pretty spicy on Saturday, because that's when the XCO is, correct?
I believe so, yes. And also yeah, qualifying for the downhill.
Yep. So they're calling for some chances of thunderstorms to roll through starting on Wednesday and then going all the way to Saturday, with Sunday showing a clear forecast, which would be great for producing a race, but I'm pretty sure the track will probably still be pretty greasy. So this is going to be an interesting race weekend, and I'm really looking forward to watching it.
I think so, too. And another thing to watch out for, which is probably less talked about, is that it's the end of the season. A lot of racers are really just racing to maintain their protected status.
That is a good point.
So if they don't qualify and they have protected status, they will still have a place in the overall run.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about. You know, the strategy starts coming into play on some of those scenarios.
You could literally be racing for 16th place.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, you know, obviously I'm looking to see how this weekend shakes out. Of course, I'm pulling for Dakota. And our guest from episode 133 is mechanic Josh Patton. So, you know, it'd be awesome to see them get the win. And, you know, we also got to see what Yolanda can do as well. She's been in the neighborhood and seen her poking around in the Pisgah area on social media.
Yeah, for sure. It's just really cool and gratifying to get to see something like this unfold, you know, not too far away from our backyard. Tight point spread, no doubt, will make for some killer end of season title racing.
Absolutely. Well, enough about all this racing stuff. Let's bring her back into the hyper-local. So, Drew, you have us a good interview for this week.
Yep. Here is Will Harlan to talk about what iHeart Pisgah is and what Friends of Craggy are trying to do for us Force users. I'm sure many of us have seen the iHeart Pisgah bumper stickers on Subarus in the area. Now let's learn about what they're doing.
Absolutely.
We're out here in Big Ivy, Pullman Boundary area, I've heard it called too. I don't really know all the ins and outs of the names of the area, but why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and let everybody know who we're talking to.
You bet. Well, thanks for having me, Drew. This is really exciting. Big fan of your podcast. My name is Will Harlan. I am the executive director of an organization called Forest Keeper, which is kind of the umbrella organization for iHeart Pisgah and Friends of Big Ivy.
Okay.
I'm also the senior editor of Blue Ridge Outdoors magazine. And for 20 years, I was the editor in chief. So I've been covering outdoor issues in Western North Carolina and Southern Appalachia for two decades now. And
very cool.
Living out here right next to Big Ivy. So I'm especially passionate about this particular part of Pisgah.
Absolutely.
Because it's my backyard. But
cool. Are you a local? Have you been here your whole life or transplanted from somewhere else?
Yeah, I'm actually from the Ozarks of Missouri, kind of the mini Appalachia, wannabe Appalachia. But I've been here for 20 years and moved out here to a small farm right next to the Big Ivy section of Pisgah. And just my wife and I growing food for a while. We now have kids and they're running wild in these woods. And so it's a special magical place that I've gotten to know over the past couple decades.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it out here too. I think the first time I started coming out here was around 2011. And I was just amazed at how, you know, awesome this little tract of land is out here and how close to Asheville it is. It's not very far away at all. It's closer than going to Brevard for a lot of people. And it's, you know, I don't want to blow the area up, but, you know, this is an awesome spot that has a lot to offer all recreational people. Yeah, I guess mainly what we wanted to talk about was, you know, we see the bumper stickers that say iHeart Pisgah, and I think a lot of people follow the Instagram too, but would you like to speak about what exactly iHeart Pisgah is and what kind of, what's the goal and the mission there?
It's really exciting. It's a coalition of over 120 organizations and businesses, and it's growing. We think we'll get to 200 by the end of the year. Who just want to protect Pisgah. Mm-hmm. We want to see more places in Pisgah protected for their recreational, scenic, ecological value. This is a special place we live in. This 1.1 million acre mm-hmm. national forest is the second most visited in the country, and people love it for a lot of reasons. We just want to make sure that it's protected as much as possible for the most folks to enjoy. So those 120 businesses are breweries and bike shops and attorneys and farmers and teachers. Mm-hmm. It's a widespread group of folks who care passionately about the forest and want to see it protected.
It's an excellent mission. I wish there were more than that amount of companies involved with as many as we have here nowadays. That being said, what is, you know, with the companies that are involved and that are members and stuff like that, what do they get out of it besides advertisement? And then, you know, in return, you know, what's their commitment? What do they have to bring to the table?
Yeah, it's totally free to join iHeart Pisgah. And the goal isn't to make money or build an organization. It's to show the Forest Service how many people care about Pisgah and want to see it protected, because there's some very powerful interests that have other agendas for Pisgah. And we want to make sure that the Forest Service hears loud and clear from the people who are using the forest and enjoying the forest the most mm-hmm. that Pisgah is protected. So how this all started, 7 years ago, the Forest Service released a draft plan that proposed opening up 70% of the Pisgah-Nantahala National Forest to logging. Mm-hmm. And that seemed incongruous with how people were actually using it. Who were the main forest users? They were bikers and hikers and paddlers and campers and climbers, folks, even the own Forest Service's survey of the people that use the forest, 92% of them were hikers and bikers and nature lovers and outdoor enthusiasts. And yet they were proposing to open up to 70% of the forest to logging.
Seems like an insane amount of this area to open up to logging.
Yeah, and to be fair, they probably wouldn't have logged all 70% of it, but they were opening the doors wide open for some of the most beloved parts of Pisgah to be clear-cut or heavily logged. And that concerned us because Big Ivy was on the chopping block 20, 30 years ago, and this area was going to be logged. They started logging just up the ridge here, and then there was an outpouring of opposition from the local community right here in Big Ivy. This was before my time, but a lot of the old timers, a lot of the folks who lived out here said, no, don't cut Big Ivy. And the Forest Service, to their credit, hit pause and said, we will not continue this logging project. We will postpone until the next forest plan. And that's what's happening right now, is the Forest Service is about to release another forest plan. It guides the next 30 years of how they'll manage the forest. And it's essentially a blueprint. It's saying, here are the areas we're going to log, here are the areas that we're going to protect. And iHeartPisgah wants to see as many of those areas protected as possible, especially the really important recreational, ecological, scenic areas that are beloved by so many folks.
That's excellent. So as far as the timber industry goes, is there a specific type of tree or wood that they're trying, that they desire to harvest, or is that just in general just a part of forest management for them?
Well, generally they like big trees, and Big Ivy has a lot of big trees. We have nearly 4,000 acres of old growth out here, and this forest, because it's so steep and rugged, escaped the axe, a lot of the steep slopes did. So we have some really spectacular cove forests, some rare species, some incredible old growth.
Lots of hardwoods out here.
Lots of hardwoods. It's an amazingly biodiverse forest. And in fact, one section, the Walker Cove Research Natural Area, is a protected old growth forest. But the other 3,900 acres are completely open to logging at this point. And so we wanted to make sure those special places were protected. And we want to make sure that they don't come back and try to log Big Ivy again, because this place is far more valuable as a standing intact forest than it is cut down.
And it's been logged before, obviously, because a lot of these trails are from, you know, a lot of the trails are clearly old, you know, extraction beds and stuff like that. Do you know when that was?
Yeah, that's how it got the name Coleman Boundary, is around the turn of the century and into the 1920s and 30s. Yeah, this was logged where we're standing here at the Big Ivy picnic area. Was probably a staging area for a lot of the sawmills. There were a few sawmills right down here in this kind of flat part of Big Ivy near the entrance, where there was heavy timber operations going on. Over time, this forest has recovered, and a lot of the coves escaped logging. And so we have some outstanding old growth. We have incredible waterfalls. And as you mentioned, there's an incredible trail network here, built partly on the old logging beds, but also some incredible trails, both downhill trails and just scenic trails along the backbone, along the spine of the Black Mountains. The Big Butt Trail, the colorfully named Big Butt Trail, is one of the most underappreciated 6 miles in all of Southern Appalachia. You get panoramic views of the Craggies and the Blacks. And not easy to get to, so virtually no one uses it. And it's spruce fir forest. It has rare species. It has 5,000, almost nearly 6,000 feet elevation summits. It's spectacular. So there's some really amazing things out here in Big Ivy, and we want to make sure they're permanently protected.
And what's the relationship with, I guess, iHeartPisgah and the Friends of Craggy, or what other projects and organizations are kind of lumped there?
As I mentioned, 7 years ago, the Forest Service proposed opening Big Ivy and all of Pisgah, really, to logging, to significantly more logging. And so we out here in Big Ivy, just a bunch of neighbors, a couple of farmers, some old timers, teachers, myself, we sat around a wobbly table at the Big Ivy Community Center and said, what the hell do we do? How do we stop this? And we didn't really know what we were doing, but we said, well, let's hold a meeting. Let's invite the Forest Service to the community center and get some questions answered. And we thought, you know, maybe a dozen folks would show up. We made some cookies, had some apple cider. Forest Service was there. Over 400 people came that night.
Wow, that's not a very big building.
they had to force people out of the, close the doors because of fire code restrictions. Folks were waiting out in the parking lot to speak. Mm-hmm. That's when we knew how many people cared about this part of Pisgah, and that we had something really important to say to the Forest Service. And they heard us loud and clear that night. It was very respectful and a positive meeting, but just the overwhelming turnout, the overwhelming show of support for this part of the forest indicated to us that we need to be something more than just a bunch of neighbors. Mm-hmm. These were folks from all over Western North Carolina that had come to speak to the Forest Service on behalf of this special place. And so that's how Friends of Big Ivy formed. And then we realized, you know, we can't just protect our backyard, because if they don't log here, they might try to log somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so I Heart Pisgah grew out of that, where we started identifying with several of our partner organizations the most important places to protect in Pisgah. We can't protect all 1.1 million acres. And the forest has a multiple use mandate, which includes logging as well as managing for wildlife and recreation and water. But we wanted to see how many important places we could protect. And we identified about 36 of the really special places, the best mountain biking trail loops and the best waterfalls and camping spots and the places with the rare species and the most important habitats. Mm-hmm. And that's what's on iHeartPisgah's website, are those 36 places.
Okay.
And that's what we're asking the Forest Service to protect in this next forest plan. And we just asked businesses, restaurants, gear shops, gear manufacturers. Our very first iHeartPisgah coalition signatory was the Outdoor Gear Builders Alliance. Mm-hmm. So, we just kind of built grassroots from scratch. And so far over 120 organizations and businesses have signed on to say, yes, let's protect these really special places. We're not anti-logging. We're not anti-anything. We're pro protecting the really best highlight spots of Pisgah.
Yeah, the hidden gems, so to speak.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
So, and I saw on that the proposal is to get this redesignated to, what was it, a scenic designation?
Right. So here in the Big Ivy area, what we're proposing, because there was so much support for this area, the forest plan has, a draft was released and over 24,000 people commented on that. Over half of those comments were about Big Ivy in this section. And all of the comments, it was nearly unanimous in support of permanent protection for this place. And so we proposed to the Forest Service, after that outpouring of support, let's permanently protect it, not just in Forest Service plans, but mm-hmm. as a craggy national scenic area, where it would be permanently protected as a scenic area, which includes all of the views from Craggy Gardens, the Mountains to Sea Trail, as well as all of the trails in Big Ivy, especially the high elevation areas around Douglas Falls, and mm-hmm. and just really protect the scenic and natural and recreational values of this place.
How does having it designated as a scenic protected area differ from what its current designation is?
Right.
And what is its current designation?
Good question. Most of Big Ivy is still open to logging. It's the forest plan has different lingo, matrix and interface, but it's essentially most of this forest could be logged at any time.
Okay.
And so every 30 years they redo this forest plan. And so we'll have to do this again in 20 or 30 years, unless it's permanently protected. If it's a national scenic area, it's protected forever. And we don't have to keep coming back every time they do a forest plan and begging the Forest Service to protect it. It's enshrined, it's codified, it's protected forever. And that's the ultimate goal for this particular forest. Not every part of Pisgah should be a national scenic area, but Craggy Gardens is the most visited and most photographed spot along the Blue Ridge Parkway. Mm-hmm. And it overlooks all of Big Ivy and that view shed and those trails and those waterfalls. It's especially spectacular.
Just catch the hashtag Craggy Gardens on Instagram, and I think the proof is right there.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So we felt like this place made sense to protect permanently as a national scenic area. And what's really exciting is that everyone agrees. Mm-hmm. Even the timber industry, even some of the hunting organization, they've all been in a long-term collaboration around this forest plan. And their top priority, the thing that they've all agreed on is, Craggy should be protected. Mm-hmm. Other places, you know, there might be some disagreements over, but there's clear consensus that this spot is deserving of permanent protection. And so does the Asheville City Council and the Buncombe County Commissioners. They've all unanimously passed bipartisan resolutions supporting the Craggy National Scenic Area. So we think there's a really good chance that this forest plan will recommend protecting all 18,000 acres as a Craggy National Scenic Area.
Excellent. And so aside from logging, what other things would that designation restrict?
That's essentially it. You can still hunt in a national scenic area, you can ride bikes and hike and camp. Everything is still open to recreation and all of its current uses. It would just ensure that it wouldn't be logged or clear cut or bulldozed or mined, or nothing extractive would occur mm-hmm. in the future, essentially.
So no natural resources get robbed.
Right. So no pipelines, no clear-cut logging, no major extractive industry could come in and harm the area.
I don't see how anybody could be against that.
Right. And so fortunately, no one is. And there's been so much local support as well as regional and national support that we feel pretty confident. And the Forest Service seems to have heard us and is in agreement as well. Mm-hmm. There are industries and interests that don't like designations and permanent protection. And so there are those voices out there. They're small in number, mm-hmm. but we think here in Craggy that the voices are unanimously in support of permanent protection.
So if the only restriction that it puts on is extraction of natural resources, does it come with any other resources that it would that the area would benefit from?
So the benefits are, there's the potential for a lot more funding, a lot more federal funding, a lot more trail improvements, road improvements. It would really help this whole area benefit if it's designated as a national scenic area. So it would permanently secure the area and protect the views long-term, but it would also potentially bring some much needed funding to the Park Service up on the Blue Ridge Parkway that manages all of the visitation. To the Mountains to Sea Trail, as well as to the Forest Service that manages this part of the forest, to maintain trails and bridges and the infrastructure out here.
That all sounds like good stuff. Is there anything else you want to add that we didn't touch on with any of that?
The other potential is to, improve and expand the mountain biking opportunities out here. This is an old trail system that probably needs some updates and perhaps some expansion. There's a lot of opportunity here in Big Ivy. I think recreation is only going to grow. Big Ivy is only 19 miles from downtown Asheville, as you mentioned. Visitation is only going to increase, so we want to make sure the infrastructure is there to handle and accommodate that, and that the forest is intact and protected for more folks to enjoy. So
ready to handle the
that's
influx
right.
of yeah.
That's right.
Well, Will, I really appreciate this. You know, obviously we've got iHeartPisgah on Instagram. Is there any other social media or other things to follow for?
Yeah, we're on Facebook too at iHeartPisgah. So is Friends of Big Ivy and Forest Keeper. iHeartPisgah.org is where you can find out about all of the special places in Pisgah that we're trying to protect. And anyone can sign on, individuals as well as businesses and organizations. Completely free, no strings. We just want to show the Forest Service how many people and how many groups and organizations love Pisgah and want to see more of it protected.
Right on. Well, thank you for your time.
Hey, we're greeted with a rain shower.
Yeah, no, just in
wrapping
time.
Up. Very nice.
Right on.
Now, I made sure to go and join the iHeartPisgah when you suggested this interview. So everyone else, you should too. Big Ivy is a rad spot. You know, I've definitely not spent enough time there as you have, but it's always been a rad spot to go, and I'm glad it's getting some good love over on that side of the Pisgah.
Yeah, for sure. I do spend probably more time there than most people. It's one of my favorite local spots, and, you know, it's terrible. Don't come. I don't want to blow it up. But, it's just another place to spread the goods out here, and I think that people should at least know what's happening out there and what's in store if it does become designated a National Scenic Area.
Absolutely. And like we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, the gate at the bottom of Forest Service Road 74 is currently closed, and that means the road is closed to all users. There's probably some signage there, I imagine, but the trails are still available to be used if you can access them from outside of Forest Road 74. So any trails that cross Forest Road 74, you're still clear to use. So keep that in mind when going out to recreate.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mangler, how is the weather we're looking for this week?
Well, we've got that big storm churning down towards Texas that's got, you know, an optional direction that it could go. But either way, this midweek's looking pretty nice. And then starting Thursday, there's some potential showers moving in. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday is all showing scattered thunderstorms to some degree into the next week. But temps are, you know, in the mid to upper 70s, and lows getting down to low 60s. But, you know, still scattered thunderstorm season, especially with that storm. And also of note, it is pretty much starting to get dark by 8 o'clock now. So maybe start packing your bike light with you when you're going out for those after work rips.
Yeah, that's a very good call. Keep the light charged. And, I can't say that snowshoe turning into mud shoe for the weekend wouldn't be a bad thing. It might make some exciting racing happen.
What would be awesomest for like the first race to be super greasy and exciting, and then the second one to just be like, you know, hero dirt.
Yeah, that could also shake things up pretty good. But, you know, maybe with Danny being a dark horse and maybe being wet and muddy, and him having won there before could turn into some racing magic.
Absolutely. Well, guys, that is a wrap on this week's episode. And as always, you can find us on social media. Just search Pisgah Podcast. And we've got shirts for sale with $5 going to Pisgah Area Sorba. Just hit up pisgahpodcast.bigcartel.com. And you'll probably find some other goodies in the web store like koozies. So go on a little shopping spree.
Right on. If you had plans to go to Snowshoe and watch the World Cup, but you're just going to watch it on Red Bull TV instead, then go ahead and click subscribe and share with your friends. And buy your friends a Listen to Pisgah t-shirt and a koozie. Make sure you download a VPN so you can watch that race.
We need to do a VPN for this one. This one should